Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 475, entitled Human Creativity Still Matters in the Age of AI. I hope you knew that already. It was released on Thursday, the 9th of July, 2026. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and I'll be joined by Tess Needham in a short while so that we can get into that subject. And boy, do we cover a lot of ground. But before that, a few bits of housekeeping. If you like what we do, head to wpbuilds.com/subscribe to keep updated on all of the social platforms and various places we share our content. If you would like to get your product or service out in front of our pretty large WordPress-specific audience, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise or send me an email, admin@wpbuilds.com, to find out more, and we can certainly help you get in front of that WordPress specific audience. The other thing to mention is that we do a couple of shows. You're listening to the podcast that comes out on a Thursday, but also if you are into doing live shows, we do This Week in WordPress every Monday, 2 p.m. UK time. As always, you can find that at wpbuilds.com/live. Okay, that's all of the housekeeping for you this week. Let's get into the meat and the bones of what we're talking about today. So today I'm talking with Tess Needham. Tess works for Automattic. She's on the WordPress.com side of things. And I met her in a restaurant at WordCamp Asia this year. And she is such an interesting character. She's very much on the artistic side of things, but also trying to dabble in AI. And whilst we were chatting, I thought she was such an interesting character. I had to get her on the podcast. So today we cover a lot of ground. We get introduced to Tess, and then we talk about blogging and the zine culture. If you don't know what a zine is, hold on, you're going to find out. We really do get into a lot of ephemeral things like the artistic process. We also talk about creative inspiration and aspirations, the philosophical perspective of creativity, defining art and value judgment, who owns work and what it means to be creative, democratizing and accelerating creativity through AI, human-centric values in a technological age. You can see it's pretty broad and pretty deep, not like a usual WP Builds episode. We're really not concentrating on the code or anything like that. But in this increasingly AI-dominated world, I thought it was very interesting to get Tess's perspective. I'm sure that you'll enjoy them as well. And I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by Tess Needham. Hello, Tess.
Hello.
Nice to have you with us. Tess and I had a delicious, I think, Chinese meal. I think it was Chinese. I can't remember. In a hotel.
Chinese.
Was it Chinese? Was it? I can't remember. It was probably an Indian meal, given that we were in Mumbai.
It was probably Indian because it was in India.
It was definitely Indian. I don't know where that came from. But we spent a thoroughly nice evening in a hotel in Mumbai at WordCamp Asia. And just as Tess and I were parting ways, Tess gave me a little booklet, which I'm currently holding in my hands. And it's called Human Creativity in the Age of AI. And I took it back to my room that night and I read it and then kind of put it to one side. And then when I got back to the UK, it came out of my luggage and I read it again. And it actually hit me pretty hard. You may not have intended it to hit anybody pretty hard, but it got me because it kind of aligns a lot with what I think. And so I contacted Tess and said, "Shall we do a podcast?" And she said no. And then I offered her, that's not true. She said yes right away. I don't know where that was going. But she said yes. And here we are going to talk about it today. So Tess, do you want to just introduce yourself? Because I've rambled enough already.
Yes, sure. Well, I'm always happy to be on a podcast. Love being on a podcast. So you asked the right gal. So I work for WordPress.com. Which is a company that, or a brand that's part of the Automattic ecosystem. We have a lot of companies as part of Automattic, but I work in marketing. But my background is actually in the performing arts and performing arts research and practice. So I have a PhD in performing arts. But I was specifically with my research, I was interested in what makes performance capable of changing people's behaviors and attitudes. And it turns out that now that I think about it all these years later, these are actually things that really become relevant in marketing. So like the right kind of confrontation, a deliberately unresolved ending, these are things that I kind of discussed in my research that now are coming into my marketing world, which I'm thrilled by, because whoever knew that a PhD in performing arts would get me anywhere. But I'm sort of a creative all-rounder, and I love to make films. I love to draw. I love to paint. I do sketching. I do voiceover acting. I still, when I can, do like community theater and things like that. I'm just happiest when I'm creating stuff.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of stuff that I create and I bounce around. I actually made this cardigan that I'm wearing. I just realized
it's
that I'm
a
wearing
winner.
This cardigan I made.
It's a real
crocheted
winner. It's flowery and I'm holding the little booklet that you made, and I've been to your website. I'll drop the link in the show notes, by the way, but it's pretty obvious.
Yep.
It's tessneedham.com. And it's lovely. Yep. It's like, it's what a blog was meant to be. It's like you've kind of like offloaded your brain out into the internet, and it's absolutely marvelous. Definitely worth a little poke.
Look,
around.
I do love blogging, and I have a lot. We can talk about blogging as well, because I think it's amazing for creatives specifically, like for everyone, but for creatives specifically. And it's really since I really made a commitment to blog regularly, it's really been kind of life-changing for me.
Oh, nice.
And by the way, the booklet, it's fine to call it a booklet, but it's also known as a zine.
Oh, okay.
Z-I-N-E,
oh.
If you're not familiar with them. So they're like a mini magazine, and they come from a long cultural background of zines. And it's really this kind of DIY punk kind of aesthetic. It's what I really love about them is it's almost like a physical blog article.
Yeah,
it's like
that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I can encapsulate my thoughts. It's very low barrier to entry. I love putting a lot of time into them because I'm just that kind of person. This particular one that you're talking about, I did these illustrations of robots, and I did them with a dip pen and ink. And it was actually my first time using a dip pen and ink, but I make comic books, and I'm like obsessed with comic illustrators, you know, comic artists who the old school sort of version of that is like using a dip pen. I love like Quentin Blake's illustrations and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I had this dip pen. I had a pot of ink because, like every good creative, I hoard art supplies.
I can only imagine what your house is like. I bet I know what your house is like.
So many art supplies.
Yeah.
And I just, what I loved about this is this like juxtaposition of the really handmade illustrations that are like obviously handmade, and then talking about AI. And I'm talking about AI and creativity. And I use AI a lot, which we can get into, but I always feel like I need to go, as the young people say, touch grass after I've been, you know, working with AI for a while. I really do feel this need to just like use my hands, get out into nature, get ink all over my fingers, you know, like do something that's really tangible, messy, and like me. So I liked that idea of creating or drawing these robots with ink, and just kind of making them messy and imperfect, and then sort of sharing my thoughts around that, the humanity that I feel like as creatives we need to keep grips on, like what those things are that make us really creatively human.
I have no idea of the direction of this conversation, but I think it's going to be interesting. But I have two comments. The first thing is, never unfold a zine. That's the first thing, because you'll never put that back together. Or at least you're going to dedicate...
I have instructions on my blog for how to fold them, so never fear.
I unfolded it yesterday, because I noticed that it was made of one piece of paper. So it's a booklet. It's about,
10 centimetres high by about 5 centimetres across. Yeah. And it's basically got four sets of pages, yeah. So 8 pages in total. So, and then I noticed...
Yeah, so it's an A4 piece of paper.
Okay, it's an A4, yeah. But cut cleverly. Yeah. And then, so I thought, I'm going to see how this works. And then I unfolded it. And I've done it again. I've just done it just now. Look, this is what I've got. And now I can't... Oh, yeah, no,
I should have put page numbers on it.
Yeah, I flipped
Sometimes
it back
I put
together.
Page numbers
but
on
But it's remarkable. So there's the first thing. Never unfold a zine because you're not putting that back together quickly. But the second one is... And I know that working for WordPress.com is obviously the apex of anybody's working life. You couldn't exceed that. But, Tess, if you could go back to your 10-year-old self... And you could be anything. What would you do? What would you be now?
Well, I think when I was 10, I wanted to be an orthodontist because I was getting braces.
I wasn't expecting that.
You know how kids are just whatever's happening in their life, like that's what they want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
An astronaut. Yeah. Whatever they sort of see happening.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think I wanted to
scrape the 10-year-old comment. Go for the let's go for the 18-year-old instead. Yeah.
Maybe the 15-year-old. Yeah. Really, I always wanted to be an actor, I think, like through high school, that's what I can remember. I loved drama, but I always did lots of art, like I did creative art, I did photography. But drama was something that I was really drawn to, and I did a lot of performing in high school, a lot of Shakespeare, like monologues, plays, just lots of different stuff. Like me and my friends would make little homemade movies. So I was just always kind of making stuff. I played music as well. I played saxophone in the school, a couple of school bands. I played bass guitar in a rock band with my friends. So I was always just like creating stuff. So I think I always just thought that's where my life would go, is into something creative. And performing arts was where it went, but I've always been like a jack of all trades when it comes to creativity. So yeah, I think from a pretty early age, I was already hooked on the creativity.
Okay.
But I did have my high school art teacher, like my final year of high school, when, you know, in art you make a big major work, a big project. And I was, you know, this was 1998. I was like pushing technology. I was using Photoshop and all these kinds of things. My dad is a graphic designer, so I always had this introduction to this stuff at home. He worked from home, so I always had like early education in Photoshop and stuff. And my I used photography. I was inspired by a Beatles song. The Beatles have always been my favorite band. And my art teacher just really was very discouraging, unfortunately, and sort of told me that my work was, like, what a crappy art teacher to like squash someone's artistic enthusiasm. But yeah, really, like, I got quite defeated by that and just kind of thought, well, I'm not an artist, you know, like I can't really draw. I'm not really an artist. I'll go, you know, do theater for a while. And I really didn't like do visual art for a long time, but I've always been obsessed with visual art. And I go to art galleries all the time. I like have a pretty good knowledge of art history and those sorts of things. I've always been into it. And I just feel really upset for that like 17-year-old Tess who really was told that her art wouldn't amount to anything, because I wish I could go back and encourage her to keep going. But luckily I picked it up again later in life.
I have a couple of questions for you, right? And these are going to get dead weird really quickly. So hopefully you'll go with me. So
I'm
the
weird.
First thing is, okay, I've got two and I don't know which order to ask them in. I'll go with this one first. Where is the seat of creativity? Like, do you think that it comes out of you? Like, is there some mechanism going on in your brain? Perhaps we'd call it consciousness or something like that. Is it you that does the art, or do you think there's some other, I don't know, bigger thing? I'm not particularly a religious person, so I don't sort of have that. I think it sort of magically conjures itself in the moment, and I don't really have an explanation for that. But where what's the seat of art for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really, really amazing question. I am also not religious and also don't believe in any of the other, like, you know, mystical kind of things. I'm quite practical and quite logical. And my definition of creativity is that it's about taking in inputs. I think the inputs are really important. You can't expect to just be creative, like, in a vacuum. You really need to be, you know, reading, you need to be looking at art, you need to be watching films, like, just having, like, taking in a lot. And then processing those inputs, like, through your own skills, experience, taste, like, all of those things that make you you, and then sharing that output back with the world. And I kind of think that that's like a, I guess, a cycle of creativity. So in terms of where it lives, like, yeah, it's in me, but it's also in, like, everybody who creates. And right. it's like an ecosystem of everyone who creates. Like, none of us could do it on our own.
So
and there's just the whole thing about, you know, great artists steal. I think we're all just borrowing from each other, learning from each other, which, you know, does open the door to the AI conversation about stealing and about
derivative. That's kind of where I was going, and we'll get to that in a minute.
But if you had a different question next,
the first thing I'm going to say about that is that the analogy to that then feels like it's a sort of hybrid of stuff out there in the world which somehow gets into your head, and then you do some magic mixing bowl, like, you know, we put the ingredients in the bowl, we mix them all up, and then some cake appears, which is much better than all the ingredients, and the mixing bowl is some kind of magic that mm-hmm. makes the cake appear, kind of thing. So it's going on in your head somehow, but it without context, it wouldn't work without the wider world. And so the next
thing
is what for you qualifies as creative or art then? Do you have, like, a definition mm-hmm. where you can sort of point to something in the world and say, no, that's not art, but that is? Because I've never really, I'm not a particular big fan of modern art, particularly, like, I'm just castrated myself in the world of modern artism. Sorry about that if you're a modern artist. But
you're thinking about the, like, duct taping a banana to the wall
but
kind
also,
of
But also, I went
situation?
To this Canadian art gallery once, and there was this giant picture. And it was really, really big. It was about 12 meters across, so really big and about 6 meters high. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of it was a red line, and it was literally a red line. It was perfectly straight, absolutely horizontal, and it went from end to end, and the rest of it was white. And I thought to myself, okay, that for me doesn't seem to qualify, because what I kind of want artists to do, I think, is to struggle and to have to have a process whereby they do something extraordinary. And when I looked at that, I thought, I could do that. Of course, the bit that's missing there is I didn't do that, did I? So they certainly qualified, and they were in a big art gallery. But do you know what I mean? For me, it appears that the definition is some version of struggle and messy and failure and repetition and a slow evolution of a skill over time. So nobody picks up a guitar and goes, oh, yeah, I'm really good at this. It's like this whole months and years of, oh, I'm really bad at this. That hurts. I'm going to keep going. And then, you know, mix it all up, this mixing bowl analogy again, with all the stuff going on in life, and out pops the art on the other end. So there's this sort of struggling bit, this very messy human bit in the mix. So I don't know if that speaks to you. Anyway, the question was, what qualifies as art? And then I muddied the waters tremendously by talking.
That's okay. You told me your answer first.
Yeah, sorry.
Which is fine. No, it's fine. I guess my provocation back to you would be, like, how do you know that artist didn't struggle? The one who, you know, painted the, or did the red line.
Yeah, and you're right to point that out, and I don't. And it was ignorant of me, and I was, you know, the 20-year-old me, and it kind of wasn't the greatest approach to an art gallery.
I mean, I'm not trying to make you, I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm just having, it's just, you know, an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's definitely, one of the things about art is that, like, there's so much of it in the world, right? And it's not all of it's going to appeal to everyone. You're going to have your own tastes and preferences and things like that. I do love modern art. I also love classical art. I agree with you that the sort of level of struggle or humanity that's in art, it's something that, like, you as the viewer are then connecting with through that. And I think, you know, we're all sort of connecting with each other's struggle. And yeah, I think that is a big part of it. But, and then maybe like some people will see the struggle behind that red line and some people won't. And that's okay. Totally fine.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it doesn't
okay.
have to be for everyone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the banana duct tape to the wall is also very interesting. Like, is it art? I mean, this is the whole thing about Duchamp and the urinal and all this sort of stuff. Like, is it art? And it's almost like in some cases, it's just it's a provocation to even ask that question. And that is the art, you know, creating the conversation. So
right.
I think, do I have an opinion about this specifically? I don't know that I am qualified to decide what is art and what is not art. Mm. And I also don't think that it really matters that much. I think that everybody can have their own version of like what moves them, what they relate to, what they connect with. And that's actually something, if I can throw back to your podcast with Jamie, where you had the sort of AI debate, is this is Jamie Marsland. I don't know if
yes,
we've mentioned
yeah,
Jamie.
Yeah, I'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But he said something that I like kind of unlocked something for me in my brain, which was about how, you know, the sort of proliferation of content with AI. And he made an analogy to like going to a library and how there's just so many books in the library, you could never read all of them. So like it doesn't really matter how much content there is in the world. And it's about like what you notice, what you connect with. And it's sort of similar with art. Like, I don't know if it even matters to say like to call it art or call it not art, but it's just like what you connect with. And maybe that's something that's very basic.
Mm.
Maybe that's something that's very complicated. But that's not for me to judge. Like,
yeah.
That's for each person to judge themselves. I don't know. Was that a cop out?
No. I think it's like you. I think that's a completely justifiable position. I could see how that would be at the basis of what you're actually thinking. I mean, it's a hard thing to grapple with, right? Because I'm kind of asking you for some kind of binary answer to some ephemeral problem that really doesn't have a binary answer. So I think that's fine. However, just as a follow-up question, which occurred to me whilst you were talking, so I'm holding your little booklet and it's got a picture of a robot on the front, and it's really like you said, it's a little line drawing. Did you do that? Did you create that?
Did
you consider yourself the owner of that picture?
Yeah. I mean, I created it. I drew it. I based it on a picture that I found of like vintage toy robots.
Yeah.
So I was using a reference image, which is very common in art. I don't feel bad about that.
No.
I wasn't drawing this robot from my imagination. But one of the great things about drawing is that you can change things. Like, I left out details.
Yeah.
I made things a little bit different. I would have changed the proportions of things. But I was inspired by this image of vintage robots that I found just, you know, so doing a Google search. And that there's other robot drawings in the zine that are all from that same picture. So I just picked out little bits and pieces and drew it. But would I own it? Like, yeah. I mean, in terms of the sort of intellectual property, I would say that I did, because it's sort of like this creativity thing that we're talking about.
Yes.
Where you have the input, you know, I have the input of the robots, but also the input of Quentin Blake and of like Jason Chatfield, this other cartoonist I like, and every other artist, cartoonist who draws with a dip pen, who has this kind of style and does like a wash, an ink wash, you know, is the shading, and all of this is like has influenced my my idea when it came to sitting down and creating this drawing. That it was all this whole melting pot, this mishmash of all of these ideas, this reference image. And then there's a level of kind of serendipity as well. Like, I drew it and then I was like, oh, wow, he looks kind of forlorn. I didn't set out to draw him.
Yeah, that's
forlorn.
Yeah, now that I see it. Yeah.
You know, but so there is kind of that level of like accident that happens too, which is pretty cool. Then I just drew a whole bunch of robots and then like scanned them in and chose my favorite ones.
See, the curious thing is, now that I know that you did, I mean, I knew that you did that anyway because you handed it to me. I feel something about that because you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I really am going to struggle to get the words out for this, but there is something that I wouldn't feel like if I found out that that drawing that I'm now pointing at, that I know that you did, if you had said to me just then, no, I didn't do that, an AI did that, some part of my soul dies. There's a little bit of me which goes, oh, that's so that's a sort of simulation. And when I so I went onto your website earlier, and your most recent post was a challenge. We're back to Jamie Marsden again, who seems to occupy a significant amount of my life. I don't know what's going on there, dear Jamie. But he challenged you to make make some AI videos around a particular subject. You can go and watch them, and they're really good.
Yeah.
Who owns that? Like, who is the creative person? Like, because you prompted it, but you didn't do it. So I don't, I'm in this sort of wilderness where I don't know, is that Tess? Is that a computer? What was the, what was the sort of creative bit? And so I'm not really, like I said, I was going to struggle to get this out. The fact that I know you did that, I like that. And if I'd have found out that you didn't do that, there's a bit of me which says, I don't really want to be associated with that. And I think I am in a bit of a minority with that. I think most people don't seem to mind in the year 2026 what the creative agent of a thing was.
I think it's really hitting on a big topic that I could probably go on and on about. But yeah, like, so going back a couple of years, I started talking about AI and creativity, and I was giving a presentation actually at WordCamp Sydney, and I wanted to make a piece of, I don't want to call it art. I wanted to make an illustration, an image. And I had, as happens with me, and it probably happens with other artists too, is that I had a very clear idea of what I wanted this image to look like. And I actually thought, wouldn't it be interesting to try and create this with AI as a sort of illustration of what I'm talking about, to see what happens? I couldn't get the AI to deliver an output that matched the vision that I had in my mind. So I created it, and I actually have another zine with that image on it. I'm going to show it to you, even though we're on visuals.
I can see it. And it's, oh, okay.
But it's a robot painting a self-portrait of itself.
Oh, that's neat. Oh, that's a great. It's like that hand that paints itself that I've seen in the past. Yeah, okay.
So I created this myself. I did create it on an iPad in the Procreate app. So there was a level of technology there, which, you know, I'm fine with because it's a tool. But I talk about this, I'm talking about this example because I think it's interesting that I couldn't get it to do what was in my mind. Like the thing that I was conceiving in my mind, the idea that I had, AI wasn't delivering it, even though I kind of wanted it to, even though I hate AI generated art. I wanted, like, as an exercise to do it. And I think that's a story in itself. However, what I learned with this challenge from Jamie is that the models are improving so much that it's really, you can actually get really close to what you want now. And then for me, this raises up a whole lot of questions, because back when I couldn't get the model to do what I wanted, it's very easy to then just dismiss AI and just say, AI is shit. Like, it's never going to replace a person. It's not creative. It can't make what I want, you know. And then you have this sense of relief of, like, thank God I can still make my own art.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Yes, Jamie challenged me. I know. So we had this thing at Automatic a couple of months ago where Matt Mullenweg, the CEO of Automatic, said to everybody, let's drop everything you're doing, and for the next month, we'll have something called Radical Speed Month. And I want you to pair up with somebody and work on a project that's important to you. And so people all across the company, I mean, a lot of people stayed working on, like, mission critical stuff, but a lot of people across the company, like more than half of the company, I think it was, did this. And so I reached out to Jamie and I just said, like, even though Jamie and I are on the same team, we don't, like, our projects don't tend to overlap, but we're friends, you know. So I sort of said to him, like, I really want to do something together. I don't know what it's going to be. Let's have a chat, you know. And so Jamie had this idea that he was going to be, like, like taskmaster, like give me a series of tasks that I had to complete. And he really, because as you know, Jamie's really a fan of AI. He does a lot of stuff with AI. And he and I had had conversations about it before. And I was like, I get that AI can do a lot, but I don't really, I'm not having like ideas of things that I can actually do with AI. And I have all these ideas about, you know, creativity and how AI can't be creative and all these things. So he said, okay, here's your challenge, is to use AI, only AI, and create a film. And that was task one. I did three tasks. So that was task one, was to create a film. He gave me a brief for the film. So I was forced to, by Jamie, delve into these AI video and image making tools that I'd been kind of successfully avoiding because I'd been really poo-pooing them and just saying like, oh, these are crap. These can't do anything. And you know, when you see AI generated videos online, I always feel let down. I love looking at cat videos. You know, I'm a normal person who loves cat videos on Instagram. And I feel so cheated when I come across some video that's like a freaking AI generated cat. That's not
what
I want.
AI being like, the AI cat playing with a tiger that's not eating it or something like that.
Not what I want. I want real cats are funny enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm coming from an antagonistic position, but also I've always been like very up for anything. You know, I'm just like someone who loves experiences and loves to like try things, and I'm never going to, you know, say no to trying something. So I was like, all right, I'll do it. You know, and I really dove into it, and I kept a like a video diary every day of my experiences. Because one thing I think is really interesting is like not many people are actually talking about this kind of tension between creativity and AI. I think there's people who are like very, just like blanket against AI. Then there's people who are creating a lot of stuff with AI, but really the situation is more nuanced and there's not a lot of people who are sort of exploring it. And I think there are creatives, there are artists who are making art with AI and really like delving into that. But what I'm finding is that we hear a lot from our customers at WordPress.com. Every time we release a feature that's like powered by AI, we get a backlash. You know, like AI sentiment it's pretty negative amongst people who are not in the tech industry. I feel like we're all a bit like, you know, rose-colored glasses in tech industry at the moment and very excited about it. But yeah, I think like normal people outside of the tech industry, there are normal people inside the tech industry too. I think that they are like very skeptical about it, rightly so. And it's just like, I was very skeptical about it. I am very skeptical about it. But what was interesting getting this challenge from Jamie is that I had to use it. You know, I had to force myself to use these tools and I kind of had to hold my nose and do it. And with the first iteration of this film, I wasn't very happy with it. I felt like I just wasn't, there were so many things that I got frustrated with, like I was using Midjourney to generate images and every image generation was like slightly different. You know, I had this humanoid character and every time I generated a new shot with her in it, her face looked slightly different. She was in a kitchen. The kitchen layout kept changing. And I was like, this is just not going to read as a film, you know, and my quality bar is really high for something like this. I've made actual films before and I know what goes into it. And I know, you know, I just have like a sensibility for this kind of thing. And so I really struggled with that. Like I got it to a place that I was okay sort of sharing it internally. I was like, I'd never show this externally anywhere, except as like in the context of this experiment. But there was just too many things wrong with it. There was also a lot of stuff that I needed to composite in afterwards. Like I used like this ticker tape thing and I had to like, you know, do all this animating stuff and type it on. And I was just so, I was like, this just doesn't look good. Like it doesn't look realistic. Anyway, I wrapped it up and I like shared it with Jamie and we had a whole chat about it. And then during that chat, he was like, oh, by the way, like OpenAI has just released a new image model. And it was released like as I was making this film with Midjourney. And he's like, you know, maybe go check it out. Like apparently it's quite good at rendering text and things like that. So I was like, all right. And I went and got all the same prompts that I had used in Midjourney and I put them into ChatGPT. And I was like, my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah.
Like everything that I had struggled with was suddenly fixed. Like all of this typing stuff was fixed. This character thing was fixed. And I was like, oh my God, like it really is just a matter of like next week there is a new model that will, yeah. do, that will do what you need it to do. So I then regenerated the whole film
yep.
using those images. It came out much better. I can still see a few issues with it, but it came out much better. And then since then, actually, you haven't seen these yet, but I have been creating more. Since then, I've been like really inspired to continue making films. I did make another one, like an ad for WordPress.com that used humans in it, but I had learned from my experience and, you know, you get still, AI still doesn't do the facial like animation stuff in a realistic way. And we're so tuned in
yeah,
to human faces.
Billions of years of evolution. You,
yeah, you just get this uncanny valley. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's going to take a lot for us to actually get past that. So I you know, had learned now from experience. I worked around it a little bit. I used silhouettes. I used hands. I had this whole thing. It's okay. I'm still not 100% good with it. But then I went into animation. So it's been pretty fun and it feels a lot lower stakes than synthetic humans, you know, because you're not trying to like find the humanity in
it. It's always been a simulation, hasn't it? So, you know, exactly. even the best animation is always a simulation. So it doesn't try to replicate the real world.
Exactly. And that has also, again, changed my thinking about using these tools. So what I did, and I'm hoping that these are going to make it out into the public, is Wapu, who is our WordPress mascot. Yeah. I have a couple of little plush Wapus up here. Are.
I have one.
Our wonderful little WordPress mascot, Wapu, is that I've made some short animations featuring Wapu. And I'm really excited about them. And I've had such fun making them. And I've really been exploring all of these AI tools to do it. And yeah, what I like the normal animation process, it's already done on computers, right?
Yeah.
With when we're talking about like 3D mm-hmm. sort of modern mm-hmm. animation as opposed to like, you know, Disney animation from the past, which is also wonderful and I love. But yeah, for like modern 3D animation is done on computers anyway. They probably do motion capture, but not always with humans. There definitely are human artists who are making it, but they're using computer tools to do it. So I feel like the jump to using AI in these situations is less. It's less than like using a synthetic actor in your film. So I still do, like, I am always negotiating with myself of like, does this cross the boundary for me into ickiness, you know? Am I turned off by this as a creative? Am I still finding this process creative or not? And I've been journaling my process through this and I hope to also publish those thoughts sometime soon. But just this thinking of like, what does it feel like to be creative? What's important about that to me? And then how do I make sure that I hold on to that? Even when I'm using these really cutting edge tools. And that's been a really interesting process for me.
I've got a couple of things that have popped into my head whilst you've been talking.
Sorry, that was really a long
rant. No, I enjoyed that tremendously. Please interrupt me. I was hanging on every word. That was brilliant. So I have a few things that occurred to me as you were talking. And that is the first one. I don't want to do them in this order, but I'll forget them because I've only written one of them down. So I'll do them in the wrong order so okay. I don't forget. And I've now forgotten it. As I was saying that sentence, that thought came out of my head. Right, so I'll go to the one that I've written down and hopefully it'll occur to me. AI, sure. It'll only get better. Like mm-hmm. there's just, it's never ever, well, assuming the state of the environment maintains and we can actually put electricity into silicon circuits, it's only going to get better. Which is kind of interesting. So the idea, like
if we go back 10 years, everything that we're talking about now is Star Trek. It's like Hollywood nonsense. Yep. It's like, what do you mean you're going to talk to a computer and it's going to spit out a film for you? So there's that. Firstly, how did we just accommodate all of that? Like, oh, yeah, this is totally normal now. Oh, you mean it can do films? Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, moving on. Tell me something else that's exciting, because that's really passé now. But the other thing is, the goal has changed. So when I was reading your little booklet, I agreed with a lot of it, and it kept making the point that I made earlier about the creative process is the bit that I think is the most important. So the struggle and the, you know, the fact that you've given up years of your life to hone this skill and all of that kind of stuff, maybe we have to review that. Maybe that's not it. Maybe we're happy for our art to just be the output. And that's all we care about. So, for example, when we're, I used this analogy not that long ago in a different podcast episode, when we're in a supermarket and we're pushing the trolley around and we hear the music, we don't care who made it. We just care, well, in many ways, we don't even care that it's there. But the thing is, we're never going to spend even one joule of energy thinking, I wonder who made that. That's curious. I wonder what they were thinking when they made that. No, it's just there. It's in the background. Maybe that's the calculus that AI brings into the art debate. We don't care about the process anymore. All we care about is the output. Because your film, I looked at the two versions, you know, the one and then the other one that you've is better. They are, to my eye, as a non, you know, I'm not that critical about film. I don't watch it for the fine detail and all of that. They were brilliant, like perfect. And if I'd have watched it, I would never have known that it was an AI. And maybe that's a shift that I need to have, is just all we care about is the output. We're not going to care that Robert De Niro, is half of him in that film is him. And the bit where he jumps out the aeroplane, that's actually not him. It's not even a stunt double. It's just a computer that did that. But the plot's still good, and we enjoyed all of that. So who cares? I wonder if that's where we're heading, where we have to sort of reimagine what art is and what we'll accept.
Maybe. And it sort of goes back to what we were saying earlier about what even is art. I think that you do have to think about, like, what is important to the audience. You know, I make art, but I also am a marketer who has to be creative at work, or gets to be creative at work, which is awesome. But when you're a marketer, you are always thinking about the audience, for what you're doing. As an artist, you might be thinking about the audience, but you're also sort of creating it for yourself a little bit, or a lot. So I think it's about what matters to the audience. And so when I'm creating something with AI or without AI, I'm thinking, like, does it matter to the audience that this is AI created? So I think that, like, for these new Wapu animations I'm doing, I don't think it does matter to the audience that I'm using AI tools for the imagery, but the ideas are mine. You know, and I think that's one thing that AI is bringing us, is like the idea to execution is massively compressed. Like, it compresses that gap. I've been making these animations in less than a day now. They're like a 15-second animation between from idea to execution. And it's the time, also the budget, though. Like, we would have never made these. We just wouldn't have made them. That, we wouldn't have had the budget.
That little, what is it, 40-second, 50-second film, what would that have cost you? 50 grand? 100 grand,
yeah, I mean,
200
it's also
grand.
A period piece, you know. So it's,
yeah, beautiful lighting, yeah. Like cameras on different angles, you know, machine, like bespoke machinery that moves backwards and forwards and spits out a ticket. That, it's thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And what does it cost?
Yeah,
like,
and also
20
just the
cents
number
or
of,
something.
Yeah, I know. I did actually calculate the cost of it. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was under $100 anyway. And the number of people that have to be involved in something like that.
Right.
But as a creative, I also am, like, very conscious of, well, am I robbing work from these people? Am I robbing their, like, their chance to be involved in something like this? For these things that I've created, I never would have made them.
Right. Okay.
If it wasn't for AI. So I think that's kind of, you know, that resource gap would have been a deal breaker before. We would have never had the budget, the people, the time. And, you know, especially like animation's very time consuming. I would have had the hardest time trying to sell to my boss, like, I'm going to make these animated videos that are just cute and have Wapu in them for our brand. And like, just, can you give me like, you know, 50 grand to make that? Like, there's no way.
No.
But yeah. Now that the tools can get us there, then we're like, well, why not? Why not just try it? You know, and we can then get from like these ideas, all these ideas that are coming to me, I can get them out into the world, see if people like them, and then new ideas can come. And I think that, you know, the second and third tasks that I did with Jamie were vibe coding. And that really, I had all of these feelings about the film, about like how icky it was, how icky it felt to be like using this synthetic human when I'm an actor, I want to be in the film, you know. But then when I switched over to vibe coding, it felt really magical to me. And it felt like, oh my God, this is unlocking so much for me. This is so incredible. And I gave a little bit of thought to the engineer, you know, poor engineer. But also like it really felt like I was never, like this was something I was never going to be able to do before. Films, I've made films before. I've never coded a plugin before. And that really gave me, it. First of all, it like made it all feel magical for me and made, you know, this whole world unraveling and everything and like, oh my God, I can do everything. But it also gave me a lot of empathy for people who are using AI to make images or music or video or whatever, who don't have those skills already or haven't learnt them or don't feel like they're good at drawing or whatever it is. And then they get AI to generate that drawing for them. It gave me a lot of empathy for those people because they're just people like me, but they have a different skill set. And then they probably the task that's at hand is something that is, you know, less achievable for them or more achievable for them.
I'm gonna run with that a little bit, and something sure. That's just occurred to me. Okay, so the first thing is you mentioned that you would never have got the $50,000 to make the Wapu video, but you did do it with the $100 that, you know, were available, mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, it's loose change in a sense. I wonder if we will paint ourselves into a future where it'll be death by 1,000 paper cuts, where, no, we would never have done that, so let's just do it, and, you know, we're not robbing Peter to pay Paul, if you know what I mean, because we would never have done that anyway. But slowly, over the next decade, all of those tasks, somehow they... I'm really struggling to get this out, but they will start to become more normal. And so the people who would have done that will no longer have a place to do that. Mm-hmm. That was difficult for me to say, and I don't know if I got that out there correctly, but here's a different thing. And that is, I wonder if the world is better off with less entertainment. Mm-hmm. Hold on. What I mean by that is the lack of proficiency what makes it interesting? That the lack of abundance of proficiency, you know, how many incredible guitarists can humanity conjure up at any one time? And the answer is, I don't know, a couple of thousand, maybe, people who you'd actually go and see playing the guitar. The same for the harp, the same for painting. But we seem to be in a world where these skills are going to be available to everybody. And in the most profound thing I'm going to say today, I'm going to steal a quote from the Pixar film, The Incredibles. And there's a character in The Incredibles who said, when everybody's a superhero, no one is. And let that sink in for a minute. If we can all do these incredible things, where's the space for the creativity? Mm-hmm. Where's the space for the awe? Where's the space for the individual who can be above the rest of us because they're just so sublimely talented? I wonder if that's something we need to worry about. Do you know what I mean by that? Mm. Like the fact that something is rare makes it desirable. Gold is not abundant, so we treasure it. I mean, it's shiny and quite nice, but apart from that, but if there's AI films everywhere and AI music everywhere, and it really is dialed in to just squeeze out the last possible bit of endorphin in your brain, what do we do? Like, is that a desirable thing? Discuss.
Yeah, I mean, you've raised a really good point. I don't know that I've thought about it from that perspective before. So I'm
no,
just
I hadn't
sort
until
of
just now as well.
Think so, out loud. Yeah, so. Okay. I don't have preformed ideas about this. However, I do think one thing that I'm finding with my AI explorations is that it's still really important that the ideas are coming from me. And so I do think that it's like the idea is more important even maybe than the execution. And the execution is a way of communicating the idea. But it's really about the idea, and the idea is something that's so human. AI can certainly have ideas. It can certainly spit out ideas, but it doesn't actually know if the ideas are any good. It needs the human kind of judgment for that, at least now. All of these things you have to say, like, for right now. But also that humanity at the core of something is like how we connect with each other. And I don't know that that's ever going to go away. Like the way that we connect to another human, maybe it's through some AI thing that they have produced, but it's the idea at the heart of it is theirs. I hear what you're saying about proficiency. I'm not sure. Like I've never been someone who is highly proficient at one thing. I'm very much a generalist and have always throughout my life been like, I'm good enough at this, I'm going to move on to the next thing because I just, there's so much to learn. But if you're like really at the top of your game and like the best guitar player ever, I mean, I think,
it's interesting, isn't it? Like, would like you go to see an AI simulation of a great guitarist? I don't know that I'd ever would. I think there's a bit of me which would go, no, that's weird.
There's actually there's a quote that I've got somewhere. I've put it somewhere, which is from Margaret Bowden, I think it was, who said, like, robots could be programmed to play a perfect game of tennis, but nobody would watch.
That's true.
So it's true. Like, we like imperfection. You know, it's one of those things that makes us human. Could a robot be programmed to be imperfect? Sure, but we would always know that it's a robot and so it's been programmed. You know, it's not, there's not that like anticipation of them maybe stumbling or hitting the ball in slightly the wrong way or whatever it is. I want to believe that we will always value that.
Yeah.
I really hope that we do always value that.
Yeah.
But one other thing that's really interesting with AI and with all of this like democratization of all of these skills now that's happening is that we are all able to share our ideas like in a much, we're able to get to certain outputs that we never thought we could before in a more like straightforward way.
Yeah.
So there's this framework that I came across that I really love, which is like the loom, the slide rule, and the crane.
Yes.
And so
I read
it's
that.
Talking about the tools. Yeah, I've talked about it a little bit, but it's like, so just for your listeners who may not be aware, but the loom is referring to a tool that replaces a human, as the loom replaced a human weaver. The slide rule is something that assists us. So it's like a tool that assists us to do something faster or better or more accurately or whatever. And then the crane is something that helps us do, a tool that helps us do something that was never possible for us to do before. And so I've been like, I think it's a really useful framework to think about AI tools. So for instance, like having ChatGPT generate an illustrated, like having ChatGPT putting in a prompt that says like, draw a robot that was looked like it was drawn in a dip pen and, you know, et cetera. That is a loom. Like that is replacing something that I can do. And not only that I can do, but that I find really enjoyable. I find it really like important for me to do that. And then a crane is something like what I experienced when I was vibe coding, where I was like, this is something that I could never have done before. I mean, yeah, I could have gone and learned coding for several years, but I didn't have time to do that. Like, there was no real reality in which I was doing that. But then what I was, you know, considering and what I mentioned earlier is like, for an engineer who has spent their whole life learning to code, like maybe vibe coding is a loom. Like maybe it's something that replaces something that they really enjoy doing. Mm. And that the crane for them, the thing that was out of reach, is generating an illustration with AI. And like, who am I to...
Oh, it's like an interchangeable
be the
set
arbiter
of
that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's like, interesting. So it widens,
I just think
the,
it's
it widens the
everyone.
Horizon of all possibilities for each person. Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. Okay, I hadn't really thought that one through. So you become...
I think just... Depending on your relationship to the task that you're getting AI to do for you, I think it really changes the way that you feel about using AI for that task.
Okay.
Whether it feels,
so
you know,
if it's kind of, it's a bit like
magical.
Not on my land kind of thing, you know, if it encroaches yeah. on the thing that you've spent a couple of decades getting really good at, that feels yeah. bad and invasive. Mm-hmm. But if it enables you to get a picture out there in a way that your hand simply couldn't do with a crayon or a pen or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just use the word crayon. I don't know if that's like, is that like, do artists
use
crayons?
I've got crayons. Okay, I've got good. Crayons right, in my crayons. Art supplies.
but if it allows me to do that, good. All happy.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where we're headed then. Maybe there's this version of just sort of self-improvement, but at the same time, a recognition that those moats that we put around ourselves, you know, this thing that we're really good at, those moats are sort of going to become a little bit shallower and a little bit easier to traverse because everybody's going to have a small boat now to get across it. I really extended the moat analogy there, probably a
you
little
did,
bit too
did.
Far.
But
yeah.
One thing that I was thinking about a lot with my movie making, movie generation, is how important it is that I've had, like, what is it now, like 30 years of experience making performance and telling stories. And that's like all of that, you know, back to my 15-year-old self making videos with my friends or being in my rock band with my friends or whatever. Like all of that is part of the rich tapestry of tests, you know, that means that I can make a better quality output with AI. I have that quality bar. I notice the small things. I know how to make a story. I know how to do like beats. You know, all of this stuff that I don't mean like beatboxing. I mean like beats of a
yeah,
story.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how to beatbox. but like all of those things are, you know, it's important, or it's the output is better because of my experience doing the actual thing. When I was vibe coding, I was like, whoa, I'm like really out of my depth here. And like, this is super cool that I can suddenly, you know, fix something on my website that I couldn't fix before. But also like, I have no idea if what I'm creating is actually good code.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's still a black box to me. And there's still, if I was going to be like making a SaaS product or something, I'd still want an actual engineer to work on the code. So there's still a room for that expertise, but I do worry about, and I have kids, and I worry about like what's happening with education, and like what world are they coming into, and how are they going to learn those foundational skills that will make them better?
I'm just going to sort of slightly segue a little bit.
I just opened another can of worms.
I saw in the press recently, I think it was Finland, it might have been Sweden. Anyway, it was a Scandinavian country. In the very recent news, they've got rid of all technology in their schools. They've decided that the sort of learning via iPad and computers was a bit, for them at least, that was a road that they went down just like everybody else. And they've decided that they're going to go back to paper-based books and learning and teachers and, you know, whiteboards and all of that, because they've figured out, actually, you know what, that was a blind alley. It all looked very good on paper, but it didn't actually give us the results that we want. So that's interesting. And I'm gonna kind of end it because we're heading to the hour mark here.
Yeah.
But my background is history. And what history shows is that it is entirely possible for humans to make dreadful mistakes on a really grand scale. And totally. You don't see them coming, but historians have great fun picking apart. How did that? How did the Roman Empire go from that to just rubble? How did that happen in such a short space of time? And so the pessimistic and curmudgeonly side of me, there's going to be a bit of me forever, I think, which will worry about this. And I don't see it as an impossibility that some of the stuff that we're portraying as great and brilliant and interesting, perhaps not. Perhaps there's a version of the future. Maybe it's a 1 in 1,000 futures. Maybe it's 10 in 1,000. Maybe it's 999 in 1,000, where AI turns out to be not the thing that we hoped it would be. And as if nature was in some way listening to my words, it just started to heavily rain outside. I'm getting some backup from the...
I mean, neither of us are religious, but...
So, Tess, I don't know if we've solved it. Mm-hmm. I've certainly enjoyed batting it around with you. And can you not hear that? That's so loud.
I can hear it a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe that was a perfect way to kind of bring it to a close. Tess Needham, thank you for batting that around with me. I hope that none of it was too uncomfortable, and I appreciate you chatting to me. Thank you so much.
I loved the chat. Thank you so much, Nathan.
It's so loud.
Okay, that's all we've got for you today. I am sure that you enjoyed that episode. Wasn't that a little bit different? Very nice to chat to Tess Needham today. If you did enjoy it, head to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 475 and leave us a comment there. Why not leave us a comment there? Even if you didn't enjoy it, that would be nice as well. Okay, we'll be back next week, 2 p.m. UK time on a Monday for This Week in WordPress. That's at wpbuilds.com/live, but we'll also be back for a podcast episode next Thursday. Don't forget, search for WP Builds in your podcast player of choice, and we'll be back next week. You stay safe. Have a good week. Bye-bye for now.